General Organic Biochemistry, a brief survey. The hydrocarbons. This is our first unit in organic chemistry. There's so much concern about trans fats. What is meant by trans? What's the difference between saturated and unsaturated compounds? Can you take unsaturated and make saturated out of it and vice versa? And do all the aromatic compounds have odors? And if they do, are they all pleasant? We're ready to begin a study of another family. And this family is called the alkenes. Now, alkenes are also hydrocarbons, but they differ from alkanes. And in our study of alkenes, we're going to talk about the structure, the properties of alkenes, how to name them, and since you now know how to name alkenes, naming alkenes will be much, much easier. And we'll study reactions. Let's begin with structure. Now, do you recall that alkanes were saturated hydrocarbons? Every carbon atom had four single bonds, and that was considered to be saturated. Every carbon atom was bonded to four different atoms. Not necessarily four different elements now, but four different atoms. Well, alkenes are the first unsaturated hydrocarbons that we've seen. And they are unsaturated because they are characterized by the presence of a double bond. And this double bond means that two things are bonded together by two bonds instead of one. This double bond is called a functional group. And we very often classify compounds by their functional group. Here's an example. And you should use your models and try building this one. What's it going to look like? Well, you're going to have two carbons bonded to each other with a double bond. And then you're going to have two extra places on each carbon that you're going to need to have other bonds. So your basic model is going to look something like this. And you may need springs for that double bond because if you're using wooden sticks, they won't bend. Either you will have to use springs or you'll have to use very flexible bonds, one or the other. Now, once you have that, then add hydrogens to those remaining bonds that you have there. There you go. And that is the smallest alkene structure that we have. There are several things I want you to note regarding this structure. One, the molecule is perfectly flat. It is where you have the carbons bonded to each other with a double bond, and then the two atoms that each of those carbons is attached to. Through that area, the molecule is completely flat. As a result, the electrons in the double bond are not as well protected as they are in a single bond. And the formula for this homologous series called the alkenes is CnH2n. So that all of the molecules in the series will fit this basic formula. Now, let's look at a way to take this first one and from it build the second one in this series. So let's remove a hydrogen and add a methyl group. There, we've removed the hydrogen and added a methyl group. Now, is the molecule still flat? Well, it's still flat when you talk about the two carbons that are double bonded to each other and the four atoms to which those two carbons are immediately attached. But those three hydrogens on the methyl group will stick out at different angles, and that's going to cause, in that area, the molecule not to be flat. But it is still perfectly flat around that double bond. Now let's see how to write this compound in that condensed form, that easier form. Well, let's see. We start out with that CH2 on the left, and then a double bond, and a CH, and a CH3, right? So it's going to look like this. CH2, double bond, CH, CH3. Do you see how that is? Or it could have been like this, if we had started from the other end. CH3, CH, double bond, CH2. Now remember, that double bond is between two carbons. You can't have hydrogen double bonded in these structures. The molecules are slightly polar in the region of the double bond. This area in here between the two carbons is somewhat negative. And the area beyond that is somewhat positive. Now I only showed you two of the somewhat positives, but you get the idea. That is that entire area distributed around on the back side of the carbons, if you will. But it is important to note that this slight polarity does have some impact on the physical properties. Not a lot, but some. And what are those properties? Well, in general, the alkenes are insoluble in polar solvents, such as water. But they are soluble in nonpolar solvents, even though they have that area of slight polarity. Alkenes are very similar to alkanes in terms of boiling point, melting point, things of that type. Alkenes also tend to be less dense than water, hence they're going to float. And they are gases through four carbons at room temperature. And you've heard this one before also. The larger the molecule, the higher the boiling point, just like it is for alkanes. There are two types of nomenclature that we're going to use for alkenes, and you're going to find this is going to be the case with a number of different families. The first kind of nomenclature we're going to talk about is the IUPAC or systematic. That's the one that we developed for alkanes. Then the other kind of nomenclature is the common nomenclature. Well, let's start with IUPAC or systematic, whichever way you want to call it. You follow those basic rules from alkanes, but these are our alkenes now, so we do have to modify. The name is going to end in "ene" instead of "ane." And also, it's important to make sure the double bond is in the parent chain, even if it means using something shorter than the longest possible chain. Also, you're going to number from whichever end of the parent chain is going to give the double bond the lower number. So it's going to be like alkanes, except we've got a double bond. So we're going to end in "ene." We're going to make sure the double bond is in the parent chain. And we're going to number from whichever end is going to give that double bond the lower number. All right. Let's name a few simple ones first. Well, three carbons. Now, if that had been an alkane, it would have been propane. But it's not. It's an alkene, so it's called propene. This one? Now, if that had been an alkane, it would have been, it would have been butane, wouldn't it? But it is an alkene, so it is butene, but specifically it is 2-butene. It's 2-butene because it's perfectly possible to have 1-butene. Do you see? Have a look at those. I'll stop for a minute and let you jot these down or make whatever notes you need. See, we numbered on the 1-butene, we numbered from the end that was going to give us the smaller number for the double bond. We didn't call it 3-butene, we called it 1-butene. Now, how about this one? Look at this very carefully. It's 5 carbons in the parent chain. So what's it called? Yeah, it's called pentene. But where's the double bond? You're saying I've got a branch and I'm supposed to give the branch the lower number. The double bond takes precedence over the branch. So give the double bond the lower number. And this then is going to become 4-methyl-1-pentene. 4-methyl-1-pentene. repenting. Got it? Good. Let's try numbering some cyclics now. Here's this one. Okay. What are we going to call it? Well, its name is 3-methylcyclohexene. 3-methylcyclohexene? Yeah. Why? Why didn't we number the double bond? Well, folks, the double bond is supposed to be given priority or precedence over the branch. The double bond then has the lowest possible numbers. And the numbers for the double bond are 1 and 2, carbons 1 and 2. That's going to put the methyl group on carbon 3. Now, don't number it in the opposite direction or the methyl group is going to wind up on carbon 6. Stop and count it and prove it to yourself. So, in order to name this, using our rules, we call it 3-methylcyclohexene. Now, what about this one? Okay, that's a cyclohexene, that's true. And the double bond is between carbons 1 and 2. But which carbon is that ethyl group attached to? Well, if there's a choice, give it the lower possible number. And the answer is 1-ethylcyclohexene. Now, could you have a 2-ethylcyclohexene? No, you couldn't. But could you have a 3-ethylcyclohexene? Oh, yes, you could certainly have that. But this is 1-ethylcyclohexene. Or you just may hear it called ethylcyclohexene, though that has a little bit of ambiguity attached to it. Let's look at geometric isomers. And it's best to do that with something we've already looked at, in this case, 2-butene. Now, 2-butene, remember, the double bond is between carbons 2 and 3. And if you were to try to build models, you would see there are 2 possible structures. You could have this structure right here. You see, rotation cannot occur around the double bonds that you have here. You could have this structure right here. And they're not the same. This one is cis. And this one is trans. And they're geometric isomers. Let's look specifically at each one. Here is cis-2-butene. Now notice the 2-methyl groups lie on the same side of the double bond. That's what makes it cis. Or you can think of it like this. The 2 hydrogens on the carbons that are double bonded to each other lie on the same side. Therefore, it's cis. Cis-2-butene. Now let's look at the other one. Here's trans-2-butene. The methyl groups lie on opposite sides of the double bond. Or, if you will, the hydrogens that are bonded to the carbons that are double bonded to each other are on the opposite sides of the double bond. And that's what makes it trans, across trans. Look at this one. How many carbons are in the longest continuous chain, or parent chain or straight chain, whatever you want to call it? Let's look. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes. And how are the hydrogens that are on the double bonded carbons situated with respect to each other? And the answer is they're across. Sure, they're trans. Therefore, this is trans-2-pentene. When you look at something like this, a cyclic, and you have groups attached, you can use the same method of nomenclature that we used for alkenes. Do you see the methyl groups? How are they situated with respect to the plane of that 5-carbon ring? And the answer is, they're across from it, sure. So do you then see why that can be called trans? 1,2-dimethylcyclopentane. Trans. Let's look at reactions. Now, alkenes are much, much more reactive than alkanes. Alkanes react with hardly anything except oxygen when you have a flame or something. But alkenes, oh, they do much more than that. Why? Well, it's the presence of those double bonds and those available electrons. Those other two electrons involved to make that go from a single bond to a double bond makes this structure electron rich. And we're going to look at that by looking at three reactions of alkenes. Now, these reactions will occur at the double bond, and they are called addition reactions. Addition reactions. The first of the addition reactions is hydrogenation. And hydrogenation involves adding hydrogen at the double bond, like this. We take an alkene, such as the one we have here, propene, and we treat it with hydrogen and platinum. And when we treat it with hydrogen and platinum, what happens is the double bond is broken. The double bond is broken, and the hydrogens then come in and add to those carbons until the carbons are saturated with hydrogen, producing this. Do you see that the middle carbon added one hydrogen and the end carbon added one hydrogen? And now you've converted from an alkene to an alkane. And you've converted from an unsaturated hydrocarbon to a saturated hydrocarbon. Now we're going to see more about this process later when we talk about hydrogenation or hardening of fats and fatty acids. Another reaction is called halogenation, and this involves the halogens, particularly chlorine or bromine. And we can add chlorine or bromine at the double bond. For example, if you take propene and you treat it with bromine, well, bromine will break that double bond, and a bromine will add to each one of those unsaturated carbons and produce this structure right here. Or if we write it in a condensed form, you would see it like this. CH3CHBr CH2Br. Yes, now this is no longer an alkene. The name of this product is 1,2-dibromopropane. 1,2-dibromopropane. If I'm going too fast, be sure to pause this video and make your notes. The third reaction is kind of a combination of the first two, is what it looks like. It's called hydrohalogenation, and it involves adding either hydrogen chloride or hydrogen bromide at the double bond. And it looks like this. Suppose we use hydrogen bromide. We take propene and we add hydrogen bromide to it. And when we do, we get this product. Or, if you will, we could write it like this, CH3CHBrCH3. Now, I want you to notice the hydrogen went on the outside carbon, if you will, and the bromine went on the inside carbon. And there is a reason for that. We call this particular compound that is produced 2-bromopropane. 2-bromopropane. If you need to, pause this video and get your notes. The addition reaction is very, very specific, and you need to know this about it. You will see here that the hydrogen is attached to the carbon having the most hydrogen. When you note where the hydrogen is attached, it is attached to the carbon having the most hydrogen. And then the bromine attaches to the other one. This addition is said to follow Markovnikov's rule. Markovnikov's rule. And Markovnikov's rule has often been stated in the slightly humorous way, them as has gets. And what it's talking about is hydrogen. Them as has the most hydrogen gets some more hydrogen. So the CH2 and the CH are the only two places that hydrogen can add. So the one that has the greater amount of hydrogen, the CH2, is the one that gets an additional hydrogen. And that is called Markovnikov's rule. Let's try a few. Remember, we're doing hydrohalogenation. Let's take one butene and treat it with hydrogen chloride. Now, when we do, where's the hydrogen going to add? Think of Markovnikov's rule. The hydrogen is going to add to the double-bonded carbon having the lesser amount of hydrogen. That's the CH2. Then the chlorine will go to the other one. And what will we produce? This right here. Yeah. And what's that called? 2-chlorobutane. All right, let's look at a different structure. Look at this one. Now we're going to add hydrogen bromide to the double bond here, or to the double-bonded carbons. The hydrogen is going to go to which one? Now remember, it has to go to one of the carbons that's double-bonded. So the hydrogen will go to the CH2, and the bromine will go to that carbon. And what will you produce? You will produce this. Yes, are you getting the idea? Very good. Try another one. How about this one right here? Oh, a ring with a double bond in it. Oh, yes, but it still follows Markovnikov's rule. So when you treat this with HBr, what are you going to get? Well, the hydrogen is going to go to the carbon having the greater amount of hydrogen. That's going to be the one on the left. And the bromine will go to the one on the right that already has a branch. So your product is going to look like this. Exactly. Getting the idea? 1-bromo-1-ethyl-cyclohexane. Yeah. Now, think about the three reactions we've talked about. We talked about hydrogenation, we talked about halogenation, and we talked about hydrohalogenation. So now, let's do some examples and mix it up among those three. When we're adding across a double bond, you have to think very carefully about which of the three reactions you're dealing with. In this first one, in which we're adding HBr, we're dealing with the Markovnikov reaction. Do you remember them as has gets? Well, hydrogen right here is going to bond to the carbon that has the most hydrogen. So it's going to bond there. And the bromine is going to bond to the other double-bonded carbon. Now remember, they're going to go in and add to the double bond. So those are the two carbons they will attack. And our product then is going to be CH3, CH2, C, CH3, and the bromine goes on this carbon. The hydrogen goes on the other carbon, converting that CH2 to a CH3. Now perhaps you'd like it better if you wrote it this way. CH3, CH2, CBr, CH3, CH3. Either way is just fine. Now, let's get rid of those lines we made and see if we can't deal with the next reaction. All right, we're just add hydrogen across that double bond. And when we do, a hydrogen goes to each of those double-bonded carbons. And we have CH3, CH2, CH with a CH3 attached, and our CH2 becomes a CH3. Let's add bromine now. And the bromine adds across that double bond, producing CH3, CH2, C. I'll put the Br up here this time, for no particular reason. CH3 and a CH2Br. And you understand that bromine is bonded to the carbon. You could write it like this if you prefer. CH3, CH2, CBr, attached to the CH3. That's not a very nice C, is it? And then a CH2Br. The family of alkynes is another homologous series in the group that we classify as the hydrocarbons. And under the alkynes, we will discuss the structure, the properties of alkynes, we will again address nomenclature, and a couple of reactions. Let's start with structure. Now, alkynes are characterized by the presence of a triple bond existing between two carbons. If you have models, use your model to build this one. Use springs for the triple bond. It will take three springs to do it. When you finish, your model should look like this, or if you don't have models, this is what we're looking at. Notice we have a triple bond between the two carbons, and we have a hydrogen attached to each of the carbons. Each carbon has four bonds. One thing I want you to pay particular attention to is the fact that the molecule is linear. The molecule is linear. Now let's replace a hydrogen with a methyl group. And we have the next in the series in this homologous series. How would you describe the structure? Well, you would say it's a carbon triple bonded to a carbon, and one of the carbons has a methyl group, and the other carbon has a hydrogen. Sure. And I want you to notice that the molecule is still a straight line through four atoms. The hydrogen, the carbon that is triple bonded to the other carbon, and then the carbon of the methyl. This is the case with your alkynes. They're going to have four atoms in a straight line. Therefore, it's almost impossible to have a triple bond in the cyclic part of a ring structure. Let's look at properties of alkynes. It's important to note that molecules are slightly polar around that triple bond. You have the somewhat negative portion here between the two carbons, and then you have the positive areas that lie out beyond the triple bond. This slight polarity does impact physical properties a little bit, but not very much. In general, the physical properties of alkynes are going to sound pretty familiar. They are insoluble in polar solvents like water, but are soluble in nonpolar solvents like alkanes and gasoline and things like that. They are similar to alkanes and alkenes in their boiling points and so forth. Very similar there. They are less dense than water, hence they tend to float on water. The first four of the alkynes are gases at room temperature. And, of course, they are flammable. Also, the larger the molecule, the higher the boiling point. Is this beginning to sound like an old song to you? You've heard it several times now, haven't you? Nomenclature. There are two forms of nomenclature that we're going to talk about, the IUPAC, or systematic system, and the common nomenclature. Let's start with IUPAC. The IUPAC, or systematic system. Well, what you do is you follow the basic rules that you learned in alkanes, but you modify them just a little bit. For example, instead of ending the name in A-N-E, you end the name in Y-N-E. You make sure the triple bond is in the parent chain, even if it means that the parent chain is going to be smaller than the largest continuous chain. And you number from whichever end is going to give that triple bond the lower number. All right, let's see what we can do. Let's start with this one, 3-carbon alkyne. And what do you think its name should be? Well, I have propyne. Do you agree? And notice we didn't have to number the triple bond because there's only one place the triple bond could be. Either way you write it, there's only one. Either way you count it, there's only one name that it can have, and that's propyne. Now here's another one, and what would you call it? Yes, it is ethyne. Ethyne. Well, try this one, a little more involved, perhaps, a little more interesting. Take a moment and jot down what you think its name should be. And did you get 4-methyl-2-pentyne? It doesn't matter which way you number the chain. To get the longest possible chain, you're going to have 5 carbons, and the triple bond will be in that parent chain. And because we want to give the triple bond the lower possible number, that's why we have the 2, and that means then that the methyl group is going to have to be on carbon 4. And I want you to note, there can be no cis or trans with alkynes because there can be only linear structure about that triple bond. Now let's look at common nomenclature. The smallest alkyne, remember this one that we called ethyne a moment ago? Well, its common name is acetylene, and yes, you should learn that. And then to name by the common method, we just name the groups that are attached to acetylene, or if you will, the groups that are replacing a hydrogen that's on the acetylene. For example, right here. Now, we have acetylene here, but we replace the hydrogen with a methyl group. So this is called methyl acetylene in the common nomenclature. On basis of that, what would you call this? Did you think dimethyl acetylene? There's no way that we could have both methyl groups attached to the same carbon in this one. So dimethyl acetylene is not ambiguous at all. Look at this one. And how would you call it? Did you name it isopropyl acetylene? Sure. That CH3 taken twice, CH, is a classic isopropyl group. Well, how would you name this? You have, on the left-hand side, you have an isopropyl group attached to acetylene. On the right-hand side, you have a methyl group attached to the acetylene. So just call it isopropyl methyl acetylene. Or, if you will, methyl isopropyl acetylene. Either will be just fine. Isopropyl methyl acetylene.
Acetylene is an organic compound that has long found use in our way of life. For example, acetylene has been used for years and years to help light the way of miners in the caves. If you would notice this miner's cap that we have here, you will see in the upper portion right here, there's an area where water is kept. And slightly below it is an area where we place calcium carbide. Now the water drips on the calcium carbide, and when it does, it generates acetylene and calcium hydroxide. The miner can then light the acetylene that is being produced and have a light to be able to see what he's working on in the mine. Now granted, a lot of these miner's caps have been replaced with long-lasting batteries now, but these miner's type caps are still being used today by spelunkers who are exploring caves, for example. And there are some other areas in which they're being used. Notice the reaction down here for the preparation of acetylene.
alkynes are much, much more reactive than alkanes. Why? Well, alkynes have a triple bond, and there are all kinds of electrons available in that triple bond to react with other things. We're going to look at two reactions, and these reactions are going to be somewhat familiar because both reactions will occur at the triple bond and are addition reactions. And with alkenes, we saw two reactions, both of which occurred at the double bond. You have to listen to what I mean sometime and not what I say. Both reactions of which occurred at the double bond, and both were addition reactions. The first one we're going to do is hydrogenation. Now, you saw hydrogenation in our reactions of alkenes. Do you recall that it involved addition of hydrogen at the double bond? Well, this time we're adding hydrogen at the triple bond. And this is an example. If we take propyne and add hydrogen, instead of taking two hydrogen atoms, or if you will, one mole of H2 plus platinum for the alkenes, it's taking two moles of hydrogen in the presence of platinum for the alkynes. Look at that triple bond, and you will see that it's going to take four hydrogens to saturate it. And when we do, it gets this compound, which happens to be, what is it? It's propane, sure. Note it adds twice as much hydrogen as alkenes would add. Yes, and the condensed form of our product is this, CH3CH2CH3. That is saturation of a triple bond. Let's look at halogenation. Do you recall that in our study of alkenes, we were adding chlorine or bromine at the double bond? Well, halogenation of alkynes involves the same kind of reaction. It's chlorine or bromine, but at the triple bond, like this. If we take propyne and we add bromine to it, we're going to have two moles of bromine. It takes twice as much as it did for the alkenes. And when we do that, we saturate that triple bond with bromine. Now remember, it's going to add twice as much as the alkenes did. Yeah. So our product might be written as this, CH3CBr2CHBr2. Now, I want you to try to name the product. Where are the bromines attached? Well, if you start the numbering from the carbon that has the bromine, giving it the bromine the lowest possible number, then it's going to be 1, isn't it? And how many bromines are attached to carbon 1? Well, there are 2 of them. And then how many bromines are attached to the next carbon? And there are 2 of those also. So do you see then that the name of this is 1,1,2,2 tetrabromopropane. 1,1,2,2 tetrabromopropane. We are going to begin a study of the compounds that are classified as the aromatics. This is a group of compounds that also appear in that general classification of the hydrocarbons. The name aromatic doesn't necessarily mean that it has an odor, but it does mean that we'll have a definite structure. And there are different ways to describe the structure of aromatic compounds, but we're going to use a very simple way of describing them. We're going to say that aromatic compounds contain a benzene ring. So, let's look at the structure of this benzene ring. Now, stop for a moment and look at the formula. C6H6. Oh my goodness, 6 hydrogens for 6 carbons, that's not very many hydrogens. Therefore, there must be a lot of double bonds or triple bonds or something. Well, let's have a look. Benzene has long thought to be a 6-membered ring with alternating double and single bonds. However, there was considerable question as to whether or not this was the correct structure. Now, do you recall when we were talking about cyclic compounds, we said everywhere there's an angle, there is a hydrogen? Remember like that? Yes. but we just don't write it. So benzene has the formula C6H6. It appears to have alternating double bonds and single bonds. But there is some considerable question, because that sounds like, then, that it ought to react like the alkenes react, and benzene doesn't. So there is another idea about what happens to the structure of the benzene and what is an appropriate structure. So I want you to pay close attention to those double bonds for a minute. Watch what happens to what appears to be double bonds in our newer view of benzene. Benzene acts as if it has no double bonds at all. And you saw those double bonds appearing to shift or resonate or move around. Therefore, we think there's another way that is maybe a little better way to represent benzene, and that's like this. A cyclic structure with a ring inside. And the ring represents those electrons sometimes being at one position or sometimes being at the other, or, if you will, the electrons cycling around in that ring of six carbons. Now, it doesn't matter which way you represent benzene. Benzene, you will see in one book and one way and another book another, just as long as you know that both of these are representative of benzene. Now let's talk about nomenclature. The nomenclature of benzene has long been steeped in history. There are a lot of historical names that are still being used today, and you're just going to have to learn them. So, make flashcards. That is definitely the easiest way to learn these. Put the structure on one side and the name on the other, and be sure you can go both ways. Now here's the first one. We have a benzene ring with an NO2 attached to it. We call that nitrobenzene. All right, that seems pretty reasonable, doesn't it? Well, try this one. Here we have a benzene ring with a COOH attached to it. That's called benzoic acid. And here's another one. A benzene with a CH3 attached. That is called toluene. Here's another. An OH is bonded to the benzene ring. And what is this called? This is called phenol. Phenol or phenol. Another one is a bromine attached to a benzene ring. And it is called, in a term that really you can recognize the name, and the name seems very reasonable to you without having historical significance, but it's called bromobenzene. Very simple, very straightforward. If you have bromobenzene, do you see that you could also have chlorobenzene and iodobenzene and fluorobenzene? Sure. What about this one? An NH2 is attached to a benzene ring, and this is called aniline. This is called aniline. When there are two groups present on the benzene ring, there is a special numbering technique that you need to learn. We will use the three possible dichlorobenzenes to show you how this is done. Now, there are three different ways that two groups can attach to a benzene ring. They can be attached like this, or like this, or like this. To number them, we would see it like so. Here's the chlorine at position 1 and a chlorine at position 2. On the next one, there's a chlorine at position 1 and another chlorine at position 3. And on the third one, there is a chlorine at position 1 and a chlorine at position 4. But we don't generally call them 1-2 or 1-3 or 1-4 like we've done in the past. This is where some of the historical names come into play. This one, where the chlorines or whatever groups are attached at the 1-2 position, are called ortho. In this case, it is ortho-dichlorobenzene. The next one is called meta. This is meta-dichlorobenzene. So the 1-3 position is meta, the 1-2 position is ortho. Well, what about the 1-4 position? Well, it is para, in this case, dichlorobenzene. Para-dichlorobenzene. Or, you should know that 1-4 positions are called para. Let's try a few more. Well, let's see. How about this one? What would you name it? Think about where the bromines are attached. And did you get that this is meta-dibromobenzene? Sure. Now look at this compound and try naming it. Now don't be fooled by the fact that I have the iodines appearing to come out of the sides. Remember what makes you start with one. Where is your one? And this is called para-diiodobenzene. Para-diiodobenzene. Think of that benzene ring as a steering wheel that can turn round and round and round. Let's try a few more. Here, look at this one. Now, how would you name this? Where are those nitro groups attached? That's right. This is ortho-dinitrobenzene. Ortho-dinitrobenzene. Now, it's about this time you should be thinking, do I have to write out ortho every time? No, you don't. You can shorten it to O-dinitrobenzene. And if you had meta-dinitrobenzene, you could shorten it to M-dinitrobenzene. Or for para, P-dinitrobenzene. Well, let's mix groups now and try our hand at that. Now, let's start with this. What is this? This is toluene. Now, what is it? Well, it's a group attached to a toluene. Yes, this is true. But where is that group attached? Or that atom attached? In this case, it's attached to the third carbon. Sure. So in that case, it is what? Meta-bromo-toluene. Meta-bromo-toluene. Try another. Now, what is this one? If I were you, I think I would name it as a benzoic acid, because the group NO2 can easily be called nitro. But you don't have an easy name to call the COOH, at least not as yet, and I don't plan to give it to you for a while. So I believe you would be better off calling this as ortho-nitro-benzoic acid. Ortho-nitro-benzoic acid. Now what about this one? Well, you see that benzoic acid group on there again, don't you? Yeah. And what's that other thing attached? Sure, it's a nitro group, isn't it? And where are they attached with respect to each other? They're attached on carbons 1 and 2, so, oh, this one is also ortho-nitro-benzoic acid. Are you getting the point? Well, let's reverse the process. Give the structure for ortho-nitrophenol. Ortho-nitrophenol. Well, I think if I were you, I would start with phenol. There's phenol. Now we want to put a nitro in the ortho position. And the ortho position is the second position. Remember, it's a 1-2? So this would be a nitro group attached right here at carbon number 2. And so you have ortho-nitrophenol. Let's give the structure for 2,4,6-trinitrotoluene. Now, what are you going to start with? Well, I think if I were you, I would start with toluene. Now, what are we going to have attached to this toluene? Well, we're going to have a nitro group, that's an NO2 group, attached at positions 2, 4, and 6. So here we go. There's a nitro at position 2, a nitro at position 4, and a nitro at position 6. Yeah. Okay, 2,4,6-trinitrotoluene. By the way, that has another common name. Did you know that? It's called TNT, trinitrotoluene. Yeah. And as we study other functional groups, we will be adding more to the aromatic nomenclature when we have the need for it. Let's talk about properties of aromatics. Their properties are varied. Aromatics can have such a huge variety of products, and it really often depends on what's attached to the benzene ring, rather than the benzene ring itself. Now, as for benzene, well, benzene is a liquid at room temperature, and it has the odor of gasoline. Why? Because it's frequently found to be a component of gasoline. But you need to know, benzene is carcinogenic, so try to avoid significant contact with your skin. The reactions of aromatics. They really don't undergo addition reactions like things with double bonds would. Why not? Because they don't actually have double or triple bonds like your alkenes or alkynes. They undergo an entirely different type of reaction. And we are not going to be studying that other kind of reaction. Wow, we've covered a lot. We talked about an introduction to the concept of hydrocarbons. Then we talked about alkenes and how they were structured and named and their reactions and such. And from there we talked about the cyclic alkanes. And we talked about the formula for the homologous series of the cycloalkanes. We talked about alkenes and their characterization by the presence of a double bond. And alkynes and the fact that they have the triple bond. And we talked about reactions of alkenes and alkynes, as well as nomenclature. And then we spent a few minutes with aromatics. Yes, such a lot of material.